The following message is from the pulpit ministry of Lake City Baptist Church. It is our prayer that God would use this to help you grow in your relationship with Jesus Christ. For more information about Lake City Baptist Church, please visit us on the web at lakecitybaptist.ca.
Yeah, sure. Exodus 21. That's quite different. It's stewardship. But it's stewarding. Last week we preached, talked about stewarding my time. This week it's about stewarding my treasures. So the topic is still stewardship, but... Pardon? Yeah. But it's a different area of stewardship. So now those of you that thought the pastor was always organized, now you know better. And I'm preaching on organization. Yes. Yeah. Exodus 21, verses 33 and 34. And I just want to use this to sort of launch over into the topic. It's kind of an odd passage to use, but I want you to look at what it's saying here. And if a man shall dig a pit and not cover it, and an ox or an ass fall therein, the owner of that pit shall make it good, and give money unto the owner of them, and the dead beast shall be his. So this is talking about being a good steward of your treasures. Because truthfully, if you dig a pit and you don't cover it, or fill it back in, you're not stewarding very well. Because it's talking about an animal that's underneath your care and control, underneath your stewardship, and the animal fell in the hole because of carelessness. And we ought not to be careless with our treasures. And so the main focus of the message is going to be there, but we're going to remind ourselves of how we ought to steward our treasures. And that how we steward what we have, our treasures, I'm just using the word treasures to talk about in general the things that we have in our life, will be imitated, in our children. Your children will learn how to use what they have from you. And so that's very important. It was interesting, we actually had that topic came up at lunchtime. Susan mentioning about how she has things that she prefers, that are, you know, she's quite preferential about, and Wyatt right away saying, I think our kids are copying that. And that's a very poignant statement. It's a very common statement, but it's very true. Our children are imitators of us, whether we like it or not. Sometimes we like it, and sometimes we not. Amen? All right, so I want to go through a very simple outline. I'm going to start off with, number one, if you're going to steward your treasures, honor God financially. Not because I'm going to sit here and harp on this. This is a common thread that we're not afraid to touch on here in Lake City Baptist Church. But we ought to honor the Lord financially. And so I'm just going to, like I say, it's a simple outline. A lot of practical thought here. This is just simple, right? Letter A, tithe faithfully. If you're going to honor God financially, you've got to tithe faithfully. I will say this, if you don't tithe, your kids won't tithe. Because if it's not important to you, it won't be important to them. And I'm not saying that you can't teach around that, but you got to do what you say, not just say it, not do it. Amen? All right, so, okay, I'll give you some verses. We'll go through the scriptures together here. I'll try to cut off at 3 o'clock. I may go a little bit over, but I'm not trying to be long today, okay? Leviticus 27:30. I want you to turn to Malachi chapter 3, and I'm gonna read two passages to you when we get there. Leviticus 27, verse 30, and the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It is holy unto the Lord. So there's a great verse about the tithe. It's holy unto the Lord, separated for God. It's His. Okay? Matthew 23, verse 23. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, spices, seeds, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, and mercy, and faith. These ought ye have to done, and not to leave the other undone. I want you to focus on that last wording. These ought ye to have done, and not to leave the other undone. So the Lord is not saying you shouldn't have tithed, but you should have been merciful. He's saying you should be doing both. And you're so focused as Pharisees on your perfectionism of tithing that you've forgotten the other things. But the Lord's not saying, forget about that, do this. He's saying you should be doing both. And so that would be Jesus confirming tithing in the New Testament. Okay? Malachi chapter 3. That was my point of reading that, if you will. Malachi chapter 3. I've got to get there myself. Just before the book of Matthew, verse number 8. Will a man rob God? Well, the obvious answer to that would be, well, of course not. That would be foolish to rob from the Lord. Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. So the Lord's calling it robbery, stealing, by not giving the tithe. That's the Lord saying that, right? You're cursed with the curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation, bring you all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven, pour you out a blessing, that shall be not room enough to receive it. So this is talking about that tithe. In verse number 11, you could add verse number 11, I just have to tell verse number 10, but I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes. In an agrarian society, it was a big deal. So the Lord could look at people who were not honoring the Lord with their finances, with a tithe, and send locusts. Well, that would be horrible. Now, you and I don't grow rye and barley and wheat. And if my strawberry patch dies, that little hanging basket that's been dead for 2 years, it's not going to hurt me because we live in a different time and we live differently. But that doesn't mean that the Lord can't intervene in my finances nonetheless. And he can make a little go a long ways, or he can make a lot not stretch very well at all. And he seems to have a great way of doing that. Okay, so you've looked at Malachi. We're going to go to another passage on tithing, then we'll leave this. Okay, Hebrews chapter 7. Hebrews chapter 7. The reason that I'm showing this in the New Testament is because it is not only an Old Testament principle, but a New Testament principle. It predates the law. It continued during the law. It was confirmed by Christ, and it continues after the law. Hebrews chapter 7. Hebrews chapter 7, verse number 1. I'm going to read 10 verses, but I'm going to read them to you quickly. Does anybody know who Melchizedek was? Does anybody remember Melchizedek from the book of Genesis? Abraham met this guy, Melchizedek. Okay? Father Abraham, back in Genesis 7, 8, 9-ish. Okay? Meets this guy, Melchizedek. And this guy is described as the most high priest of Salem. Melchizedek was an appearance of Jesus Christ. It's called a theophany. Abraham had a face-to-face encounter with God, and that's who Melchizedek was. Okay, so I just want to, then Hebrews is talking about that. This is the story, okay? King of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all. First by being interpretation king of righteousness, after that king of Salem, which is king of peace. Who's the king of Salem, king of peace? Jesus Christ, right? Without father, without mother, without descent. Who's that? Without father, without mother, without descent. That's the Lord, right? So this is telling us who Melchizedek was, okay? Having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God, abideth the priest continually. Now consider how great this man was, unto whom even the patriarch Abraham gave the tenth of the spoils, the tithe of the spoils. And verily they that are the sons of Levi... This is the Old Testament priesthood. Part of this is dealing with the priesthood, okay? Who received the office of priesthood have a commandment to take the tithes of the people according to the law that is of their brethren, though they came out of the loins of Abraham. But he whose descent is not counted from them received tithes of Abraham and blessed him that had the promises. And without all the contradiction, without all the contradiction, the less is blessed, the better. Verse number 8, look at this. This is New Testament after the priesthood. After the Old Testament was done away, after the law was done away, verse number 8 says what? And here men that die receive tithes. That can't be in connection to the Old Testament priesthood, because that would have been done away. Hebrews is dealing with that fact that it had been done away. This is a commandment for New Testament Christians. But there he received them, of whom it is witnessed that he liveth, and I may so say, Levi also, who receiveth tithe, payeth tithes in Abraham, for when he was yet in the loins of his father, when Melchizedek met him. My point was that it is a New Testament practice. We could talk all about the priesthood, different topic, but if we're going to honor the steward our treasures, we need to honor the Lord financially with tithes. Tithe faithfully. B, give sacrificially. Okay? I'm going to read a passage to you. You can mark it down. This is B under point one. Give sacrificially. 1 Corinthians 16, verse 1 and 2. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. This is when Paul wrote in Philippians chapter 4. He's talking about what they were doing in 1 Corinthians 16, verse 1 and 2. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store as God hath prospered him, that be there be no gatherings when I come. And I just have some comments underneath that. We could use lots of other scriptures. I'm trying to get off this topic and onto something else, okay? How much should I give? The biblical answer is not a specific amount or even a percentage, but that you give sacrificially. What does sacrificially mean? Sacrificially means that my giving cuts into my standard of living so that I feel it. Otherwise, it's not sacrificing, is it? Like, I buy lots of Starbucks. If I flip enough money into the offering plate to buy someone a Starbucks, I'm not really giving sacrificially. I mean, I'm just kind of tossing some change in, right? So I do not believe one can settle how much that we ought to give. I'm afraid the only safe rule is to give more than we can spare. One test would be if our expenditures on comforts, luxuries, and amusements, etc., is up to the standard common among those with the same income as our own, we're probably giving too little. Because the world doesn't sacrifice, right? So if we live the same as the rest of the world, we're not giving sacrificially. Another would be that if our charities, that's our charitable giving, do not at all pinch or hamper us, I should say they're too small. Isn't that a fair assessment? That's a reasonable way to look at it. There ought to be things that we would like to do and cannot do because our charitable giving excludes them. Then you're giving sacrifice. That's sacrificially. It doesn't mean that you have to sell your house and live in a tent to qualify to give sacrificially. That doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. It doesn't mean that you give up everything you own. That doesn't make sense. Okay? But those are ways to look at charitable giving. This also enables us to experience God's financial faithfulness in our lives. All right, number two, we're off of this topic of tithes and offerings, okay? But we're going to deal with finances in a different fashion. Number two, if you're going to steward your treasures, curb impulse spending. I think one of the greatest problems North American people have is impulse spending. All right? So how do you do that? Letter A, I got underneath here, ignore your impulses. You got to ignore your impulses. And what I mentioned underneath this, big box and chain stores spend a lot of money researching how to place aisles and products so as to maximize customer impulse spending. They are actually trying to play with your mind and get you to buy junk. That's why they got stuff at the checkout stand, la, 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 la. I mean, I'm not going to get into the whole thing, but that they arrange aisles so that you have to look for items. You have to go on that. You know that stupid hunt that you have to go on in a big box store because you can't figure out why is this stuff not with this stuff? That's done on purpose. They want you to wander the aisles. Because while you wander the aisles, they are hoping you grab a box of something and throw it in your shopping cart. That's their whole purpose for getting you to do that. So you've got to ignore those impulses. How many of you have them? Yeah. Yeah, and impulse spending will kill you. It will kill you. Because it'll suck up budget money like there's no tomorrow. Have you ever noticed this? Have you ever noticed this? This is very true, okay? If you go to the store, let's say weekly, monthly for a big shop, and then weekly for supplements, supplemental things, right? Perishables, milk, whatever. Have you noticed that you can live with an X budget? But if you go to the store every day to buy supper for the day, I don't mean you went to McDonald's or the Chinese place, which you may do from time to time. I'm talking about you went to the grocery store for supper for the day. It all of a sudden costs you, like for us, it's like $30. Right. Well, the three of us don't need a $900 supper budget. But that's what happens. Right? And some of that is impulse spending. And honestly, I like if you get me lost in the chip and pop aisle, there will be havoc paid. Now, I didn't put this in my notes, but I'll tell you something not to do. Do not go shopping hungry. I am really bad at this. Because my portion size, for one thing, gets it's already wildly out of control. It gets radically and ridiculously out of control if I am hungry. And some of these teenagers have been shopping with me and will testify to the fact, I go into the superstore, I start with a basket, and if I am hungry, I am sending someone with a loony to get a shopping cart because we can't drag all this stuff to the front underneath our arms anymore. So am I wrong? No. And so, you know, you got to do that, okay? Now, here are some mechanisms to help you curb your impulse spending. I have curd time. I've got the B instead of the D instead of the B. Number one, pray before buying. Impulse spending. Pray before buying. You know what sometimes the prayer mechanism is? It actually makes you stop and think before you just react. I mean, some of it's getting the mind of the Lord, and I'm not trying to discount the mind of the Lord, but some of that will be a mechanism to do that. Pastor Hallmark and I had an interesting conversation one day about divorce and remarriage. And we're talking about it, and Pastor Hallmark says he doesn't encourage people who have gotten divorced, even in hideous circumstances, people who have separated, even in hideous circumstances, to get divorced. And I said, well, that's why. Like, I was trying to get his mind on that. He said one of the reasons that he doesn't want them to get divorced is because the problem is they get remarried too quickly. And that prevents them from making an impulse decision or a lonely decision and winding up in a silly relationship quite quickly after just being involved in a bad relationship. And I thought, well, that's an interesting thought. Now, there's theological discussion on that, and that's different. But I thought that was an interesting thought. And what Pastor Hallmark was talking about was controlling some impulse stuff, eh? Getting on control of these silly decisions that we make. And we all make them in various areas of our life. I'm just talking about stewarding treasures today. Pray before buying. Number two, set limits on spending without consultation. Now, if you have a habit of going to the store and buying $100 pops of items, whether it be at Canadian Tire and Tools or whatever. I don't know. I mean, why it's here, I'm not trying to pick on why. I'm just saying, if you have impulse problems, call someone. Here's a good rule of thumb. If you actually have to ask whether you should buy it or not, you probably shouldn't. Is that fair? That's true? Yeah. I'm not saying don't buy stuff. What? Sometimes you just need it. Tammy says, sometimes you just need it. No. No, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you don't. I'm not saying don't have stuff. What did we play last night at the pastor's house? PS3. Well, I'm not saying I don't have stuff or not to buy stuff. I'm saying watch your impulses. Okay? And then number three, my big pet peeve. You're going to go shopping. Tell us. Tell us. Use a list. Use a list. Yes. Yes. We have very little of these anymore, but we used to have these experiences where we'd go to the grocery store and we would stand in the middle of the shopping cart and I would say to my wife, what are we getting? I don't know, what do you want? That's not going to go well. That making the list as you fly, you will not get home with what you need, and you will get home with a whole pile of stuff that you didn't actually need. Yes, and that's a waste of time and a great irritation. Use a list. Okay? You know, put a list on that deep. There's all kinds of ways. Like Lois, I would think, would do some things maybe differently because Lois isn't home in the evening. She doesn't know all the time when she runs out of stuff because there are four or five, six people using the kitchen. Right? Everybody's got to take a turn cooking. You run out of A, B, C, D, E, F, G, nobody knows. You got to write it down on a list on the fridge or something, right? Because nobody, when they go to the grocery store, is psychic. Right? I don't get in tune with all my psychic channels, and I've tried shopping like that. That's when you wind up with stuff you don't need and not what you do need, okay? So letter B, in concerning your impulse spending, letter B, save for quality. Save for quality. Okay. And the reason that I want to teach a word that we actually used in sales, and it's a good word. We used it in sales all the time, and we used it probably stretched it in sales when you're trying to sell stuff. What you need to buy is value. You need to spend your money on things that have value. And that's doing a cost benefit analysis. That's what you're doing. Okay? So give you, for instance, right? Steven, I think Steven needs running shoes. There's a for instance. Okay? Still need running shoes? Okay. Steven needs runners. So we have A. You only do what you can. We're not talking about Lois's child, and Lois's income is limited more. But doing a cost analysis benefit, okay. Well, does Steven need $200 Air Jordans? Steven, would you like it? Yes, you would. I'm sure that you would not be disappointed if Mom bought you a $200 pair of Air Jordans. Does Steven need? Is that a good use of the money? No. But the cheapest pair of shoes at Walmart is not always the best either. So you're looking for value. Why is it not the best? Because if he goes through running shoes and he wears out three $20 pairs, or I bought him a $40 pair that lasted the same time as the three $20 pairs, I'm ahead of the game by buying the $40 pair rather than by paying $40 a year rather than paying $60 a year. That's, you don't understand what I'm trying to get at? So you're looking for value. So just because it's cheap, you always should find a good deal, but just because it's cheap doesn't mean it's a good deal. Just because it's expensive doesn't mean it's quality. Right? It could be just a name stuck on it. Air Jordans, etc. So you look for value, right? If it's going to be disposed of quickly, cheaper is better. You know, when you got little kids, cheaper is better. Because they grow like stinking weeds. And you're not going to pass a pair of something down sometimes from one to the other, because if they're $50 jeans, they're going to thrash them. If they're $5 jeans, they're going to thrash them. Buy the $5 jeans. Huh? But you look for value. If you plan on keeping it and using it for a while, buy something with good value, something that will last for a while. Right? Lois got value, that KitchenAid. Right? You know, we have one too. We happen to get one at a garage sale. We don't use one as much as Lois, but that has good value. They're whipping up bread dough all the time. I mean, that to me just makes sense. Makes total sense. If she had come to me, she got a birthday gift, Christmas present. But I'm saying, if she would have come to me and said, Pastor, I think I ought to buy one of these. I think she ought to too. Because you use it so much, you ought to have a decent quality tool for doing that job that you do so often. Because you could go buy another cheap one and buy three of them and spend as much money or more money than you would on it. You know what I'm trying to say? Value is important, okay? So save for quality. Letter C, prioritize needs versus wants. Prioritize needs versus wants. It's okay to have your wants fulfilled from time to time. But make sure your needs have more of a priority than your wants, or you'll be in trouble. Because you get all your wants, and then you'll be... You know what? You know how alcoholics spend their money? Needs first, wants later. Wants first, needs later. I got that backwards. Wants first. That's what the alcoholic spends their money. I want. Oh no, I ran out of money. Now I need. Now I got everybody knows James. Cigarettes. Keep harping on him about cigarettes. I offer him less help because he won't get rid of the cigarettes. Why? Because that's not a need. That's a want. You got to take care of that want. Get your wanter fixed, right? And free your budget up for the things you need. Get your needs first. Your wants come later. It's okay to have some wants. I want pop and chips. Well, I don't really need them. But I want them pretty badly from time to time. Right? Number three. And I'm going to try to use, I got a bunch of stuff here, but I'm going to try to keep it. So number three, in stewarding your treasures, value your property. Value your property. Take care of the things you have. It's a big deal to me, okay? It's a big deal to me. Now, I have taught this and preached this to the teens more than one occasion. I do not mind replacing that which wore out. I am irritated at replacing that which broke from negligence. That one irritates me. That bothers the fire out of me. We broke it because we weren't careful, or we were stupid, or we were angry and smashed into the wall, or etc. That ticks me off. Because I know how hard it is to get the finances to buy something. I don't want to buy good items to have somebody jump up and down on them and smash them. I can buy you a bag of dirt. If you want to jump up and down on something and smash it, I will buy you a bag of sand from 7-Eleven for $2. And you may have that the rest of your life to jump up and down on. But if it's a toy or a tool or some other item, don't treat it like it's a piece of garbage. Don't treat it like it's a bag of dirt. Or if you were my child, I would exchange your toy for a bag of dirt. Right? So it's important that you take care of what you want. Care for your things. Use things for what they were designed for and in the manner that they were designed to be used. I have a whole pile of thoughts. I'm just going to spill my little brain here, okay? Number one, toys are not tools. Toys are not tools, okay? Don't smash your toys like they're a hammer. I'm speaking especially to younger kids and parents. So don't let your kids do this. Don't let your kids use their toy truck like it's a hammer. It's not a hammer. Hammers were built for a purpose. They have a solid metal end to smash nails into boards and other places. They're used for that. That's not what I don't tamp nails in with my truck. yeah, probably. I use tools for what they're used for. My dad would get stinking mad. This is my dad's pet peeve. If my dad caught you while you're putting something together, and my dad was just a farmer. My dad was not a mechanic, but my dad cared for his things. If my dad caught you monkey wrenching, like fixing the vehicle, banging something in that needed to be pounded in with anything other than a hammer, you were liable to get the implement that you were using thrown at your head. So using, and why would Mr. Agus would understand better, using the ratchet for a hammer was an absolute stinking no-no. Or the crescent wrench, which is actually a cheap wrench. But still, using the crescent wrench as a hammer was not what it was designed to do. And my dad would flip a lid. So he used a hammer to hammer. Slag hammer, yeah. Yes, I've seen guys do that too. The tip is brass, and there are three or four little tiny, they're not even called a hole, they're an orifice. And they're a specific size of hole for a specific amount of flame to come out of. And when you bang brass, it's soft, and you'll destroy it. Shot. It's replaceable, but why would I replace it? I have had a hammer that I've had for 12 years. I don't need to buy 12 torch tips to use as hammers. That seems to me to be a waste of time. Okay? So this is the same with other things. Okay? Use things for what they're used for. Number two, electronics are not indestructible. I'm thinking about young people, and I'm thinking about parenting. Electronics are not indestructible. Hey, don't leave them lying around near water or on the bed overheating. We have a rule at the school about laptops, tables, and glasses of water. And what are they? Can't have. Can't have. Mrs. Agus may not have a cup of coffee near the laptop. That's why. Yeah? Why? Because that's accident prevention, right? Accidents happen. Even to adults. And I'm not trying to pick on her, but the reality is you'll spill a cup of coffee from time to time. You're not going to stop life from happening, but you better not just be fooling around with your electronics while it happens, especially young people. And parents, what you need to do is not let your young people get away with that. Listen, you can make the decision to do that, because if Mrs. Agus had spilt her coffee on her laptop, she would have a method, a way to buy another one. She could get an extra shift. She could come up with the money somehow and say she would have a mechanism that she could look at getting that. Do you, as a teenager, you don't. And so you become irresponsible, because what you then do is say, my laptop burnt. Mom, can you buy a new one? No. No. If you go and buy your own iPod, you can dangle it in a cup of water all you want to. But don't dangle the one I bought you. Right? Wait till you got your own job, you're living on your own, then you can dangle your iPod in the water till your cows come. You can have a bath and drop it in the bottom of the tub. I don't care. It's yours, you bought it. But I don't steward things that way. Okay? So you gotta be careful, okay? Teach your children this, in particular teens, because most have, this is why teenagers have Superman syndrome coupled with a God complex. This means they consider themselves indestructible and infallible. In other words, I will never get hurt and I never have accidents. That's a Superman syndrome coupled with a God complex. Your average teenager walks around with that in their mind. Yes, immediately following the accident and the mistake that they made. I'm not accusing teenagers of being bad, but I'm just saying the teenage mind, generally speaking, thinks that way. Okay. Number three, furniture is not a plaything. I had a chat with some children about this. Right? Well, how many of you in here know what a bouncy house looks like? You know they're specially made. Do you know they're specially made? What are they made out of? Does anybody know? Does anybody have a good guess? Just a basic guess. What are they made out of? Plastic. Well, it's rubber. Well, it's really strong. Stretchy, super strong rubber. Yeah, air blows it up, and it's so strong that you can bounce on it, and the air doesn't pop out, and the seams don't leak. Is your couch made of the same material? No. Not even airbeds. No. So if it's not made to be a bouncy house, it must not be meant to be used as a bouncy house. Do you guys still have a trampoline?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you still use the trampoline?
Uh-huh.
No, but did you use it this summer?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you plan on using it next summer? If you bounced on your couch as much as you bounce on the trampoline, would you still have the same couch? It would break, because it's not meant to be used that way.
Yeah, because it's
sitting on, yes. You can have a nap. I assume that occasionally you have caught a parent having a nap on the couch.
Daddy,
Just saying, sitting, lying, those are okay. Bouncing, throwing, wrestling, chucking, jumping, etc., 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 are not. So you can do whatever you want. You can buy 7 couches a year, or you can have the same couch for 7 years. It's all up to you, but I think the Lord would have a steward in the one couch for 7 years is far better than the 7 couches a year. Yes, yes, exactly. Now, when you're older, Alana, you can put a, when you're all grown up and in your own home, you can put a trampoline in the living room if you want. If you want. Wait till you're on your own. Okay. Mom and dad might not like it if you're a teenage girl and you happen to switch the couch for a trampoline. Yep. All right, so here, number 3, furniture is not a plaything. Number 4, kitchenware is not disposable. Right, so use it for what it was intended. You know, keep your stuff organized. If you know where your screwdrivers are, don't use the butter knife. Especially, don't use your Henkel kitchen knives. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not disposable. We have disposable things, and they're meant to be disposable. But the other things are meant to be reused. We wash and reuse, right? So we take care of them. Okay? Number 5, this is an interesting thought, and I just wanted to throw this out there. I'm not going to preach on cleanliness today. You say, well, can you preach on cleanliness? It's all over the Bible. But I will tell you this. Dirt wears things out quicker. There are 2 reasons to vacuum the carpet. One is appearance. Everybody kind of gets that, right? It appears. The other is dirt wears things out quicker. It's hard on fabric. It's hard on clothes. Right? The dirt actually is like abrasive in the material, and it will wear clothes out quicker. I don't know if anybody actually has thought about that or not, but keeping things generally clean, things get dirty. If you work a job like Mr. Agus, you come home dirty. That's part of the deal. That's not a criticism. That's just reality. But guess what he wears at work? What do you suppose?
Work suit.
Coveralls. Yeah, work suit.
And the point there is that if you actually wear those coveralls to the point where they get dirty, like the oil and dirt on them, they're actually more flammable.
Yeah.
They're actually dangerous
for it. Right. So dirt wears clothes out. Dirt wears appliances out. Dirt wears electronics out, and dirt wears kitchenware out. So keep care of your stuff. Just make things last longer. You don't have to treat it like it's a god. I'm not trying to tell anybody that, right? It's normal wear and tear. We use things, they work, they wear out. It's fine. But don't, if you treat it like garbage, you won't have it. And you'll be frustrated. Sometimes what happens, I honestly know this, people who don't take care of things are jealous of people who do. Because the people who do have things, because they're not constantly replacing things, their stack of things has grown. Right? Because the first one they bought still works. And so they bought a second one that's different and another one that's kind of the same. And pretty soon you're like my wife with kitchen tools. There's everything known to mankind stored in the kitchen. Anything you're missing? But they're all clean. No, I wasn't criticizing you. But why? Because we took care of them. And they all still work, right? Somebody else may get some use out of it, right? Exactly. Dirt wears kitchenware out. Anyways, keep stuff away. Let her be. Put things away. This is a good thing to teach your children to put things away. It is not the lesson that we were the best at, that long ago, putting things away. Why? Well, if you can't find it, you can't use it. How many of you have a lot of things that I have a word that I like to use. Ms. Lembo and I go battle over words. Pastor and his particulars about language. I don't like the word lost. I think when you lose something, That's like it's been gone for a year or longer. I just will never find this thing again. I tend to use the word lost. The thing that I lose every day or three times a week, the word for that is misplaced. If you can't find it, you can't use it. And you will I preach on this on time, because if it gets just frittered, stored, stuffed, shoved, jammed, you know, you can't find it, you can't use it. It turns into a piece of junk, right? So you get another one or whatever. Okay, so put things away. Number one, I got some thoughts. Just two simple thoughts. Well, I have three. If you can't break it, you can't or can't find it, you can't use it is one. But you can't use everything simultaneously. It's a law of physics. 10 fingers, 2 hands. How many things can you use, or how many toys can you play with simultaneously? 2. 1 for each hand. Yes, depending on your coordination. How many of you try to play with all your toys simultaneously? How many of you ever find yourself in an area where you play with all your toys out simultaneously? Okay, but you can't use them all. So don't, because usually that's how things get broken. Number two, and I apologize profusely to my wife before I state this, but a flat surface is not a storage facility. Should have a better system of organization than on a flat surface someplace. Stacked on a flat surface someplace is probably not the best system to have, right? Because you're not stewarding your treasures very well when you do that. You need to have a better system than that. Right? Letter C. This is the last point under number three, valuing your property. This is an interesting point, okay? It's important. Fix what breaks. Fix what breaks. And I'll tell you why. Broken handles, broken knobs, broken hinges, etc., just lead to more damage. If my vehicle, here's my illustration. I wrote this illustration out myself. If my vehicle has a flat tire, my tires get fixed for free because I take them where I bought them and they fix them for me for free. But it may cost $20 to $30 to fix your average flat tire. You pick up a nail on the side of the road, $20-$30 will get you at a tire shop, get your tire fixed. If I drive on it long enough, I will ruin the tire, which could cost me $100, $150 or more. I could ruin the rim, which could cost another $100 to $150 if I drive in it long enough. If I keep driving, I'll ruin the brake assembly and the brakes. That's another $100 to $150. And I will ruin the axle assembly and bearing set at some point, another possible $200 to $300. It could cost $500 to $700 to fix it if it's left long enough. Fix the flat before you wreck everything else. You leave things, you know, hinges, knobs, all that kind of stuff. Stuff that you have, you got to take care of. Or it'll just get smashed worse. And then you can't figure out, how come all my stuff is smashed? Because you don't fix it when it starts to break. You're waiting for it to have a catastrophic failure. Mr. Agus fights this at work all the time. They don't do enough maintenance, preventative maintenance. They wait till they have a catastrophic failure, and it causes this big repair. They were supposed to put a bearing in. Bearings have inner, outer, right? They spin, they hold a shaft, the shaft spins. You wait long enough, the bearing starts to go, the thing starts to seize, the inside race starts to spin on the shaft, and now we've scored the shaft, we've wrecked the shaft. If it falls out of its place, it could be a spinning shaft that's going to wail off and smack something else. It's going to take out another item. It's eventually going to take the bearing that's on the other end out. And all we had to do is replace the bearing. And we should have done that long before everything just piled up and smashed and crashed. Well, it's the same thing with everything that we own. Take care of your stuff. Value your property. And that's very important. Right? Because then it just lasts longer. And then what you have will go further. Because you won't be constantly fixing stuff that you own. And that goes with your toys, it goes as you grow up, and it goes with your with the things that are even more important than toys, tools and possessions and things that you use every day in life. Take care of your stuff. That's how we steward our treasures. That's a simple outline on stewarding treasures. Amen? You got to take care of our stuff. You got to take care of our stuff. Or the Lord may just stop giving us stuff. Let me ask you this question. The way that you take care of stuff, would you give you more stuff? Why would we ask God to? If we don't take care of what he's already given us. Amen? Let's pray. Heavenly Father.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this message. For more messages from the pulpit of Lake City Baptist Church, please visit lakecitybaptist.ca.